Baby, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Hand him on my wall. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Ryan Federson. She's a visual artist and a public artist, and her installation Inhabitants opens at the new Concourse B at Portland International Airport this November 2021. Thank you so much for doing Art Focus by Zoom, Ryan.
Thank you, Joseph, for having me today.
I love it when people do airport work. There's just something about that kind of commission. It's public, it's grand, you have big spaces to fill. I don't know where the budget comes from, but it's usually not that limited. So I always feel like artists get a chance to play, do their best work, and then represent, So this work, Inhabitants, it's a lenticular, which is one of those things that when you move past it, it changes the image. So it's a series of like triangular rods as you walk along in the airport in the new concourse, which doesn't open till November. These images will change. So tell us what the images are and what's the meaning of inhabitants and why you chose that format.
Yeah, so I'm very excited to have this work at the Portland Airport. It's a big jump for me in my public art career. As you're mentioning, airports are a big part of the public art field, and I'm very excited to be working on this piece. It has several components, one of which is the sentinels, which are the lenticular metal panels. And this piece was I did the proposal initially before the selection. And when thinking about the criteria, talking about stewardship of the land, I wanted to think about stewardship a little bit differently. And so these lenticular panels are portraits of Pacific Northwest biomes. We have an exceptional number of biodiversity in our region, which includes all five of the major biomes.
Could you tell us what a biome is?
A biome is a habitat that's suited specifically, or where life is suited specifically to live in that habitat. And so they include things like tundra, aquatic, coastlines, forests, grasslands, and deserts. And so to have all of these different types of regions in such an isolated area, especially with the devastation that these habitats have faced through extraction, population, et cetera, and of course, climate change, is really unique and special. And so I wanted to make the piece both about that, but also to be a symbol of protection. And so I'm thinking about themes of environmental personhood in this piece. And so as you're walking along the corridor, you'll see a portrait of each of the biomes. But then because of the lenticular nature, as you become adjacent, the portrait shifts and the viewer is confronted with a ginormous eye. The idea is that as we look at the land looks back at us, that humans are not unwitnessed, and that our actions and inactions are witnessed by nature, by land, by the other life forms, as opposed to the idea of stewardship where you just care for something because you're being responsible for it. I wanted to think more about the innate rights of nature and that we don't get to determine whether we have rights over nature. So I wanted to make the work kind of a little confrontational, where you're confronted with this enormous eye looking back on you, but also thinking of it as a symbol of protection and as kind of like talismans to each of these different biomes. Almost every biome is currently in threat in the world, with the exception of deserts.
What kind of eyes did you consider? I know there are the eye petroglyphs in the Columbia River Gorge, and there's the eye on the dollar bill. What else came to mind as you thought about the eye?
I think that there's a lot of eye talismans throughout the world. The most iconic would be, of course, like the evil eye talismans. But I was thinking about petroglyphs and also about like She Who Watches and these eyes above us watching over us in petroglyph depictions. And so there are They're very simple and graphic. They're not very natural, like a natural human eye.
Then tell us about the five biomes. I mean, you must have gone further than Oregon because I don't think we have tundra here.
You have alpine tundra.
Actually, and you live in Tacoma. So when you say you're a Washingtonian. But tell us, where's our tundra?
Your tundra is in your alpine mountain ranges. So Washington is actually similar. So when thinking about the Pacific Northwest, I was thinking more broadly of our region without the kind of imaginary line that divides Oregon from Washington. Specifically for the alpine tundra, I photographed sisters with the kind of rising climate that those glacial reservoirs are smaller than they often are. Not only is that water storage and release like very important to other ecologies, but there is life that thrives in that tundra.
So you got this commission. Did they say, do what you want, or you submitted an idea and you were chosen?
They started with an invitational call, and then they selected a number of artists to prepare proposals. And so I was provided with an orientation. Initially, I had a completely different idea before coming to the orientation. And then when I started to understand how people would be navigating the space, I started going in very different directions. And then I used that as a jumping off point to develop a project. So this project was entirely developed based on kind of some of those initial conversations and then proposed pretty much identically to how it's installed.
Mm-hmm. So if you go to Concourse B right now, it's being built. They're putting the windows in and they're going to be very big. Your work will be inlaid in a wall with windows above it. Is this thing actually done yet? Are you sitting in a warehouse?
The artwork's in different stages. So I actually proposed a variety of different artworks. So there's the lenticular panels, which are in this wooden feature wall. I've also designed some of the wooden panels to kind of interfere and with the wooden wall and to add some content that kind of bridges my piece and the wall. And then there's also another artwork, which is 22 glass panels, which is on the second story. So when you go and board the plane, you'll pass the glass panels, which those are done. They're ready to ship over. They were produced in Peter's glass studio in Germany. And then I've also interfered with the planters, and they'll have cut holes in them with backed in black steel that are closed-eyed. So you'll have this, I think it's 20 panels at 50 inches. I think that's like 80 feet, 86 feet, something like that, of glass across the top that is designed in this kind of rainbow dappled cloud covered sky. It's not an area that you can get really close to when you're not moving. So I wanted it to be something that created the impression of like a pattern in space. Then I took the opportunity of thinking about movement again. And so this piece also uses optical illusion. They use Miore to look like the clouds will appear to roil as you hurry past them with your luggage to get onto the plane.
Mm-hmm. Say a bit about Miore. How do you spell it and what is it?
Miore, it's a M-O-I-R apostrophe E. And it is an optical illusion where there is a pattern on two surfaces that have a space between them. And that's called parallax. And that parallax can create the illusion that those two patterns are moving. You can use it to literally animate something, but in this case, they're all identical concentric circles that are equally spaced. And so when the parallax activates, it appears like it's almost like a spiral.
Mm-hmm. And then how are you thinking of the four users? They're basically people, you know, carrying coffee and looking at phones, sitting there with their wheelie bags. How do you get their attention? And what do you want to say to them in their half an hour in the concourse?
I thought about this differently for different elements of the piece. And so for the lenticular panels, I wanted for it to first look like something kind of very expected. These are etched metal portraits of the land, which I kind of like traveled around Oregon and took photographs and then turn those photographs into collages or depictions, like black and white cutouts that are then etched onto the metal. So it's a very standard thing you would see. But then you have this moment when you reach the perpendicular adjacency with it, where there's this surprise, where there's something else to find and discover. I was also thinking about, there is some history of airports having weird and strange works, like the Denver airport is known for its kind of mysterious artworks. And so I liked the idea of these having a surprise that maybe you don't notice the first time. The same thing with the clouds moving, is it might look decorative and you may not notice that they roil until your fifth time through. But this is a commuter concourse. So the expectation is that there will be a lot of repeat passengers. And so there's this opportunity to, some things maybe not go noticed, be noticed immediately, but kind of unveil more elements of the artwork over time. And mostly what I want the passengers to get from it is a sense of a relationship with the land, and to be thinking about themselves as not just viewers or tourists, but that those places have agency and rights of their own. Mm-hmm. And that spectatorship goes both directions.
I think this is going to be Alaska and Horizon. So these are little flights, a lot of them, you know, to the Bay Area and around Oregon. So it has kind of a local angle. Just tell me how you did your research, because you did it during COVID, right?
I did. This project, the orientation was right before COVID. We were just starting to hear about it. And then from that point on, including the proposal research and the development of the project was all during COVID. I did end up being able to still travel to these different regions in Oregon. I went all the way down to the Alvord Desert and across to the Zumwalt Prairie and Sisters, the coast, etc. And I did it all in my van, sleeping in it, because it wasn't really safe to do much else. So it was a more rustic trip than I was expecting, but it was very, very, very beautiful.
What kind of van you got? We had the producer of Nomadland on the show recently.
I have a little Ford Transit van. I'm very practical, and so it's not the prettiest car you could drive, but I can load a lot of gear in it and move artwork and, in this case, camp in it across Oregon.
So you have like a platform bed or something in the back?
It's basically like the back is like open like a transit van, and the front just has two seats, but they're kind of a little nicer. And the transit vans are really a broad array of features. They can have a lot of different makeups. But I just throw a memory foam on the back and you have a bed.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is visual and public artist Ryan Feddersen. Her installation, Inhabitants, will open at the new Concourse B at PDX in November 2021. So if anyone doesn't know who you are, they should definitely go to ryanfeddersen.com and look at all your work, because it is just amazing. You have such a diverse use of media. It seems like you can do anything, right? Glass, installation, social practice. There's just so many different looks to your work. You know, some of it belongs in a gallery. Some of it is you stumble across it in the street. So tell me about how you managed to master so many different media at such a young age. And was that always the intention?
It wasn't always the intention. I imagined that I did want to be a public artist, and I did want to make work for like social conversation and to be contributing to cultural dialogue. But I thought I was going to be a painter. And then when I went to art school, I ended up going to a couple different art schools. And at first I was a little grumpy about trying different mediums. But then by the time I graduated at Cornish, I'd picked up a major concentration in painting, printmaking, sculpture, and drawing, and a minor in photography. It took me a little longer to get my bachelor's that way, but I use all of those skills. And so I definitely don't regret it. And I think part of what I came to learn was both that I just love learning new materials and new things. and that the problem solving involved with picking up a new skill is very exciting to me. But also I started to understand that materials have different connotative properties and that you can think really differently about content when you bring in material, action, interactivity, and add those to the conversation. I usually think about both what materials are most appropriate to the site, but then also what materials are most appropriate to the content, and how, like, the ideal for me is when the materials and the imagery together create new content that couldn't have been made in just like a flat application, like a drawing or something.
Three of the artworks on your website, there's one called Antecedents, which is looks like film, right? These are big photos. Then there's Remains, which is all glass vessels with designs on them. And then there's Waterways, which is kind of manhole covers, and, you know, people are interacting. For each of those things, do you try and master the medium? You know, do you learn glass blowing? Or how much do you outsource and how much do you get involved?
I do really like working with partnerships. It really just depends on the project. So with Antecedents, those are light boxes that are intended to reference like x-rays and diagnostic processes. And so in that case, I created all of the imagery, not photographs, they're Illustrator images that are intended to look like x-rays. And so I drew all of those in Illustrator, and then they're printed on a film that is then laminated in glass. And then the studio that did the glass also did the like metal framework and electrical components to kind of fit those together. In the glass vessels, those were a part of a residency at the Museum of Glass where mm-hmm. artists design work, and then the glass blowing team puts it together.
That's in Tacoma, right?
It is in Tacoma. In this case, I drew on a lot of past projects and the imagery generated from those, and then laser cut them into little pieces and composed vignettes. And then they blew glass forms based on plateau basketry, which is of my heritage. Then they rolled the hot baskets across the vignettes. And so that's how those were created. That last piece, the waterways, I cut all of the stencils using a plotter in my studio and then applied them to the cement with a product called, I think it's called Rainworks, where you spray it and then the images are water activated. So like on a sunny day, there would be no artwork. But then when it rained, these false man covers would appear in the cement throughout the Wallingford neighborhood.
That's amazing. But it sounds like because you're pretty handy with a computer and a plotter and all that kind of thing, you make it easier for the fabricators to finish the job, you know, to execute.
Yes, I do consider my digital skill set one of kind of like the backbones of my practice. Even though I'm a sculpture and installation artist and social practice artist, I'm also a digital artist. I just don't make a lot of digital art that's viewed digitally.
And that must be good then, because you can kind of scale up. I mean, I could see you doing a projection on a skyscraper or, you know, some kind of monumental work. Do you think big like that in the future?
I do tend to think big. I think that the relationship with art to the scale of the body has a lot of power and interest to me. I've always loved things that, like artworks that you can enter on immersive experiences.
And then, I mean, how do you pick a scale when you're thinking of a work? Where does that come from?
It usually comes from the site or from the content of the piece. But especially in public art, a lot of times it kind of becomes like self-defined by looking at the site.
I love that piece, Micro Spill. It's basically a glass snow globe full of oil and water. And it's about dirty water, right? Pollution and Standing Rock. And then you have Coyote Now Epic, which is images straight on the wall of a gallery. Those two scales seem very, very different, like two different people would have come up with them. But somehow you did it. What type of thinking would you call that? It's almost like three-dimensional thinking. Is that something you've cultivated or always had?
A little bit of both. I feel like I've always had a very good sense of spatial directions. I can eyeball measurements very accurately. I can intuitively tell directions. I can tell where water is.
What, like a divining rod?
I don't know. I just know which direction water is. And then you know, based on an overhead map, this is something I know I learned from video games. I can take the landscape features where I'm physically in and imagine an overhead view of what a map might look like, and then orient myself based on those landmarks and my mental map. And so living here and also growing up next to a river in Wenatchee, if you know where the water is, you know how to get anywhere.
That's amazing. What are your favorite video games?
I was a big Zelda fan, and the newest Zelda was pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And then as a Native American, do you find you're getting commissions based on your heritage? And what kind of things do people expect of you, and how do you control for that?
I don't think I'm getting commissions based on my heritage necessarily. There are projects that are specifically hoping to work with Native artists or with artists who have strong relationships to the land and culture where they're located. I am a mixed race artist. I'm Native American Monroe, member of the Caldwell Confederate Tribes of the Okanagan and Arrow Lakes bands. But I'm also of mixed European descent and white passing. So I don't necessarily make a good token Indian. And my work definitely doesn't fit a lot of expectations. But I do think that there is a growing appreciation of all of the amazing work that is coming out of the contemporary Native American art field now. There's been a lot of amazing work forever, but I feel like people are starting to see more into that field currently, and that there's just so many like unique and amazing artists. And I think that there's going to be, of course, more and more Native artists getting major commissions.
I went to a show at the Portland Art Museum in their Native section, you know, a few years ago. It was a balance between traditional and then very contemporary. And the curator put me onto this Instagram account called Beyond Buckskin. And it showcased a lot of, you know, what a 20-year-old is doing wherever they are in America, whatever medium. It was just refreshing because a lot of the Native art we see is very traditional. It's what people expect. So I think the way you work kind of blows all that wide open. You know, you're still treating some of those subjects, but your materials, you know, really contemporary.
I think part of what you're seeing is just an access point into a larger field. There are a lot of institutions and audiences for Native art that expect it to look and be a certain way, to address specific subject matter, to use different specific materials, to use specific imagery, and oftentimes to be either ahistorical, not contemporary, to be like romantic or of the past, or to be about suffering. That is just not what the whole field looks like. There's so much regional influences. Tribal regions have very different traditional art forms. And so you see these different, even in contemporary work, you see these different seeds of different aesthetics that are very diverse across the continent. Part of this stereotype comes from like self-limiting interactions where people say, this is what Native art looks like. We're only going to show this. But I think that the more both contemporary artists, but also the more traditional work from different regions that people are exposed to, the more we'll see that there is no stereotype, that there's a massive amount of influences and diversity in Native art. And I am really excited about like what 20-year-olds are making. And I'm not a traditional artist. I have some traditional skills, but my practice is much more a amalgamation of pop culture, technology, political discourse, and often infused with Native perspectives, particularly from the interior Salish Plateau region, which is where I'm from and my heritage, but not always. There's all these different influences always coming in because I'm always being exposed to new ideas and new knowledge and reflecting that. And I think that especially with young artists, there's going to be more and more of that. And I think that everybody's voice has a tremendous amount of value, and that especially like the rising generation of contemporary and mixed Native artists, that like there is no one way. Everyone's practice is valid, and we need to embrace that.
So Ryan, do you have any names of artists or social media accounts that the listeners could track to find out more about contemporary Native art?
Yeah, there's a lot of artists in the Oregon region that are making really exciting work. There's Natalie Ball and Kaia Farrell Smith. Of course, Marie Watt are all great artists to follow. And then there's also, I think, Sacred Village Arts is a really exciting Instagram. It is a lot of traditional regalia and beadwork, but it's just so, the selection is just so innovative and interesting. And you can, of course, follow me on Instagram and at Ryan Feddersen.
Oh, yeah. And why do you have an exclamation mark in your name?
I started doing that when I was a teenager. This happens a little bit less. I did actually get hassled yesterday about it. You know, Ryan is a boy's name. And that used to really blow people's minds and used to be the only thing people could talk about upon meeting me. And so I did the exclamation because I thought it made my name look more feminine. And I also thought it was an interesting distraction point. Like, if, you know, people could ask about the exclamation, but they might forget that Ryan's a boy's name. And it's actually worked quite well in that capacity. And so I've kept on with it. Now, as I'm getting older, I feel maybe a little sillier with the explanation point behind my name. But now it's just part of my branding. So, yeah.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Ryan Feddersen. She's a visual artist and public artist, and her installation Inhabitants will be opening this November at the Portland International Airport in the new Concourse B. Thank you so much for doing Art Focus by Zoom, Ryan.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure to speak with you this morning. And the world looks a